steadfast faith. This is another opportunity to talk about meditation. One of the problems which many meditators have is dealing with sloth and torpor, timamida, and also dealing with restlessness, too much thinking. So this evening I want to talk about those two major hindrances to your meditation. I want to start with a story that when I first became a monk in Thailand 36 years ago, I was a monk from London, and then I was suddenly in the jungles of northeast Thailand. And number one, we would get up every morning at 3 o'clock. The bell would go at 3 o'clock. It was optional though, you could always get up earlier than 3, but not later. And we would not go to bed until 10, 10.30 or 11 o'clock. We were only supposed to sleep 4, 4.5 hours every evening. And when we get up early in the morning at 3 o'clock, we go to the meditation hall to meditate. I was always very sleepy. I was always falling into sleep and nodding and nodding and nodding. And I tried very hard to overcome my dullness. Oh, please do so. Get the lights on. And I would fight that dullness. I would try all sorts of tricks. One trick, well, I haven't got it here, was to put a matchbox on top of your head with the cover taken off. Because when the tray was full of matches, if you started to nod, the matchbox would fall off and the matches would scatter on the floor, reminding you, yes, that you have lost your awareness and you've got into sloth and torpor. And so I used that as a way of knowing whether I was getting sleepy or not. And I thought it worked. After 3 or 4 days in the morning, the matchbox would no longer fall off the top of my head. And I thought, great, I'd overcome my sloth and torpor. But then the teacher in that monastery, they took me aside, which meant I was still having lots of sloth and torpor, but keeping the matchbox on top, it was so difficult to overcome the sloth and torpor. So I gave that up and I just struggled hard to make sure that I never had any dullness. Sometimes I would break through the dullness and the sleepiness would disappear. But as soon as it disappeared, it was replaced by restlessness. I could not stop thinking. And because I was thinking so much, I calmed the thinking down. And as soon as the thinking calmed down, I was asleep again. And to me it was so difficult, as maybe to many of you, trying to find this middle point between restlessness and dullness. It was like a pendulum with two extremes. And one extreme was a dull, sleepy mind. And the other extreme was a mind which was always thinking, thinking, thinking. And I could never find that place in between. I realized that my mistake was using willpower rather than using wisdom power. So I stopped and contemplated, what are the causes of restlessness? What are the causes of dullness? This is what we are supposed to do as Buddhists. Not to be fighters, but to investigate and to win the battles through wisdom rather than with brute force. And so I started contemplating, why am I dull? Then I soon realized, number one, 4.5 hours sleep is not enough for me. I needed to have extra sleep. Number two, if I had an aircon in my room, it would be set to this temperature. However, many of you are very cold because, you know, you are more used, you know, to down below in Sri Lanka where it's nice and warm. But to me, this is heaven. So you can see what it was like in the jungles. In the jungles it was very, very hot. And that makes us a cause for dullness. I remember also that I had to do my visa in Bangkok. And there was a temple which offered us accommodation for the time we were doing our visas. And in that temple they had one room which was air conditioned. And we asked permission if we could use that at 3 o'clock in the morning for our morning meditation. And they said, no one else is using it, fine. And when I went into an air conditioned room, I was not dull at all. You could meditate so well early in the morning, simply because the climate was what my body was used to. So that was one of the reasons why I was sleepy, because of the climate. And the third reason was because the food which we had to eat in those days was very, very low in protein, low in nutriment, and certainly we had sticky rice, the glutinous rice, which was common in the northeast of Thailand. And the only thing we had to eat with that rice was one frog. Now, I was a vegetarian before I became a monk. But when I went to the northeast of Thailand, there was no vegetables. Maybe we had a few leaves from the trees, and that was it. Sometimes bamboo shoots in season, but no other vegetables. So whatever slithered on the floor of the jungle, we ate. Obviously not snakes, because that was prohibited for monks. But when I was eating the frog, just boiled frog, nothing else, no salt, no sort of curry powder, no chili, just boiled frog. As if the frog had actually jumped into a pot of boiling water and been fished out again. Now, I was a scientist. I liked science at school. And because I paid attention when I was at school, I remembered my biology, and that saved me from many problems. The monk sitting next to me obviously had not studied biology. Because when he started picking at the frog, you know, obviously the meat on the legs is what you eat first, because you can eat that, it's edible. But that's not enough to keep you going through the day, so you start picking at its organs inside. He was picking at the organs, but I knew what organ was which, so I never touched the frog's bladder. The monk sitting next to me did push the bladder. The bladder still had urine in it. And so the frog peed all over the monk's rice. Now that was very gross. And even though he was hungry, could not eat rice with frog urine on top of it. So that's the sort of food we used to eat in those days. And so I was very undernourished as well. And because I was undernourished, and because I was in a climate I was not used to, because I did not have enough sleep, that would make anybody have dullness at 3 o'clock in the morning. Basically, I saw the causes and effects. So, now, living in a Western country, we have much better food, the climate is more suitable, and also that we have enough rest. It really depends. Sometimes when I'm working hard, traveling a lot, I need more sleep. Sometimes I need less sleep, especially during the worst periods when I'm not traveling and doing a lot of meditation. I find my requirement for sleep goes down, down, down. Sometimes I'm sick, and sometimes you need to sleep more. Sometimes you're so healthy and you can almost do with no sleep at all. I look at my body, you have enough sleep. And when you do sleep, sleep well, sleep efficiently. As the Buddha said, one of the great things which a monk could do, or a nun, is to contemplate or practice metta bhavana before you go to sleep. You know, to spread loving kindness to all beings in the world and yourself. And he said that way you will have a very peaceful, deep, uninterrupted sleep. And that means when you wake up in the morning, however many hours you rest efficiently. So you don't need so many hours. And when you wake up in the morning, you're fresh. Which means you don't have the sloth and the torpor when you meditate first thing in the morning. I know that on this retreat, many of you are sleeping in one room with other monks. And it will always be the case that there will be one monk who snores. Maybe that's you. But you cannot do much about that. You cannot stop the monk from snoring. Maybe the two of you, or three of you, maybe the whole four snores. On a recent retreat in Penang, just about 3 weeks ago, there were many people in the same dormitory, and they were meditating many hours every day. And so when they went to sleep at night, 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock at night, it was very difficult when they were kept awake because somebody was snoring. They couldn't get a good sleep at night time, so when they came to meditate, they had a lot of dullness. But as one meditator came and said, there's no way he could use willpower to stop people snoring. So he used his wisdom power. And what he did, he was a doctor, maybe in his 40s and 50s, a very intelligent man. And he said one of the things he loved in his life was music. So he imagined the three other people or four people who were snoring, like a symphony orchestra. Even though they weren't really in tune, he could imagine it to be in tune. And as they were snoring, each in their own way, when he imagined it as something he liked, he fell into a very peaceful and beautiful sleep. And he woke up in the morning refreshed. So even when you're listening to snoring, it is the negativity we add on to that. I don't want to hear the snoring. This is terrible. Why can't I get my own room? Maybe I should go sleep in the toilet, or whatever else you think of doing. No, just add something beautiful, a beautiful perception to that snoring. Just like it's music, like it's chanting, like it's the voices of Davids. Now, Davids do not sound like that, but imagine it is. And that way, you give a positive slant to the snoring, and then it doesn't bother you. You can go to sleep and you have a very lovely sleep. And you know, if you are Sinhalese from the lowlands, just wear some extra robes in the morning so you feel comfortable. But if you wear too many robes, then you do fall asleep. So if you want to get rid of the sloth and torpor, take those extra robes off in the early morning. Because the cool, the chill actually wakes up and stimulates the body. That's a great way of overcoming sloth and torpor. Feel the cold, or feel the heat, feel the wind, and then it stimulates the mind to overcome the sloth and the torpor. However, there is, and obviously also eat well as well. I'm glad that some of you asked for some kanchay in the morning. I don't know if Pemalal is still here, but I thought there was somebody in the corner who still would like some kanchay in the morning, but never had the opportunity to tell their room or their cottage number. Maybe you can tell them afterwards. But if you eat too much, you get sleepy. If you eat too little, you get sleepy. I remember having not much energy, and I told the monk, can you give me some meditations so as to have more energy? And he said, eat more rice. And I thought, this is what a wonderful piece of advice. Because now the rice, it wasn't like eating more curries, which was going to indulge my tastes. It was actually eating more energy food, because I wasn't having enough energy. And I just increased the amount of rice I ate, not the amount of curry or fruits, because that would be just my desires. Just increased the amount of rice I ate, and my energy came back. Just like in a car, you haven't got enough petrol in the car, it's not going to go very far. So I looked at all those practical ways of overcoming sloth and torpor, you know, to get my body healthy and energy and fit. But then there were some other problems with sloth and torpor. These weren't physical ones, these were the mental problems with sloth and torpor. And that took me a long time to figure out. And the way I figured it out was with a teaching of Ajahn Chah, which was very specific, but it's in there in the Pitaka as well. The Buddha taught the same. What Ajahn Chah used to say was, if you want to have a strong body, you have to exercise it to make it fit and strong. But if you want to have a strong mind, you have to keep it still. If you exercise the mind by thinking, it gets very weak. If you keep it still, it gets very powerful. And that taught me how to overcome the sloth and the torpor. The dullness was low energy in my mind. My mind was weak. And I realized that my mind was weak because I thought so much. I thought, I planned, I dwelt on the past. My mind was so active that I did not know much stillness, which was why my mind was weak. So when you practice more stillness, when you don't waste your mental energy on useless thoughts, on plans for things which never happen, on fears which never eventuate, or even worse, wasting time on the past which is gone, which cannot be changed. Have a reflection on how much mental energy you waste. Then you'll understand why you haven't got much energy left for meditation, which is why many people are dumb. So to overcome that dullness, forget about the past. Forget about the future. One of my sayings, which I teach a lot in the West, is never do today what you can put off until tomorrow, because you might die tonight. Never do today what you can put off until tomorrow, because you might die tonight. If you do die tonight, all those things you do preparing for tomorrow is a total waste of time. And one of these nights you are going to die. And the Buddha said we should sometimes practice that we're going to die with the next breath, let alone tomorrow. So reflections like that stop you all this thinking and planning of what you're going to do next. Which means it frees a lot of your mental energy, so you don't have sloth and torpor. We waste too much energy, the way we think and plan and worry. And as for worry is concerned, I learned a long time ago not to be afraid. When I was about 8 or 9 years of age, my mother told me I had a dentist appointment, and I hated going to the dentist. Years ago, 30, 40, 50 years ago, well, how old am I, 59, so we are 50 years ago, the dentists were very rough. And they didn't have all the wonderful anesthetics and these very sharp needles they have these days. So it was much more painful going to the dentist 50 years ago. And I didn't want to go to the dentist. And I tried to convince my mother, Mummy, don't send me to the dentist tomorrow. I don't want to go. But she said, you have to go. And I said, Mummy, you don't love me. If you loved me, you wouldn't send me. But whatever I did, I could not convince her. So when I went to bed that night, I worried and I didn't sleep well because I was afraid of going to the dentist. When I woke up in the morning, I tried to talk my mother into not taking me to the dentist, but she insisted. I was so upset, and when I got to the dentist, I found my appointment had been cancelled. The dentist was sick, and I realized all that worry, all that sleeplessness was for something which never ever happened. And that was the first time of many times I worried about things which never ever happened. And as monks, the future is so uncertain, you're wasting your mental powers, and you're not being wise by worrying about a future which probably won't happen. So that way I preserve my mental energy. But still sometimes I feel dull. And if you are in the middle of sloth and torpor, in other words, I've just talked about preventing it. Now if it's actually happening and you're dull, what do you do with it? And when I was young, I used to fight sloth and torpor, as I mentioned. And it never worked. Sometimes I say you broke through sloth and torpor, you got restlessness, and that wasn't good enough. And again, when I was an older monk, I started contemplating, why does not it work? And how can I deal with sloth and torpor when it does arise? Once I understood it is from stillness you get energy in the mind, I realized that when I fought my sloth and torpor, I was wasting energy. And I was preventing the recovery from dullness. Remember, dullness is low mental energy. Which means that you shouldn't waste any energy fighting it. You've got little energy anyway. And if you fight the sloth and torpor, you are just prolonging the torpor. Once I understood, the best thing to do with sloth and torpor is to be at peace with it. To be as mindful as you can, which is not much mindfulness, but to let it be. To not fight it, to not try and get rid of it, but just to be with it. And when I was still with sloth and torpor, when I did not fight it, because I was being still, the little energy which my body, my mind had, started to flow into mindfulness. I started waking up. And soon the sloth and torpor of the dullness vanished. But this time, when it vanished, my mind was peaceful. To explain again how this works, there are two parts to the mind. This is one way of many of looking at the human mind. Those two parts I call the active mind and the passive mind. I call it sometimes the doer. And I think you can understand what the doing mind is. It is what thinks, it's what initiates actions, it's what plans, remembers, fantasizes and thinks. The active mind. It is what reacts to all the sensations which your body and mind receive. It is the active mind, the thing which does things. The other half of the mind is the passive mind, bare awareness. Just knowing, just feeling, just sensing, nothing more. A mind which doesn't react, which lets things be. Now, understanding those two halves to the mind. When I fought sloth and torpor, I was putting all my energy into the active mind, trying to get rid of something. Which means that the energy could not flow to the knowing mind, to just mindfulness. That was why my mindfulness was weak, 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 weak. It was starved of energy. When I realized what I was doing, I stopped fighting, I stopped reacting. Even to sloth and torpor, I let it be. I had compassion to love as sloth and torpor. The door of my heart was open to sloth and torpor. I could love it without any conditions. Even though sloth and torpor, you know, you were supposed to be a hindrance. Never mind, I respected you. I let you be. I will not try and get rid of you. Because I let sloth and torpor be, because I stopped doing something around sloth and torpor, I stopped reacting. The energy in my mind started flowing to the passive mind. Instead of going to the active mind, it went to the passive mind. The passive mind is mindfulness. Because the energy started going to the passive mind, to the knowing mind, the knowing got brighter and brighter, and sloth and torpor got less and less. So there was enough energy there that dullness completely vanished. Once I understood the causes of dullness, it was just low mental energy, and that I was wasting energy fighting it. I understood why so many meditators struggle with sloth and torpor. You don't need to do that. Make peace with sloth and torpor. Don't fight it. Let it be. Allow your mental energy to flow into the passive mind. Cut it out from the active mind. And then you'll find dullness disappears very quickly. 5 or 10 minutes at most. And then it's all gone. And the wonderful thing when it is gone, because you have not been encouraging the active mind, because you haven't been fighting, because you've been letting go of the active mind, when the dullness goes, there is no restlessness. all the energy has gone into knowing, and the doing, the active mind, has been starved, which means you're alert, you're mindful. There's hardly a thought going in your mind. The active mind has been calmed, which means from that point on, you get into some very deep and peaceful meditations. So dullness should not really be considered a problem. And in fact, in all the years which I've been teaching meditation, people who have trouble with dullness, I'm not worried or concerned about you at all. It's an easy defilement to overcome. The ones I am worried about are the ones who are restless. We cannot stop thinking. Those who have dullness, at least you can be calm. At least you know you're not sort of going crazy. So you know you guys are okay. The ones who think, who can never be dull, they're the problems. There was one monk who I grew up with, and we would sometimes meditate all night, once a week, on the Poya days. You know, this is not just the one days we do the Patibhokha, but the days, the weeks in between as well. Four times a month, we would meditate all night. We would forego sleep. So of course, on those nights, we'd sometimes be very, very, very dull. But there was one monk who would never get dull. He would always sit straight every night, and you would never see him nodding. He was a very quiet monk. And myself and the other monks thought that was a monk who had such wonderful meditation. You never saw him being dull. And after four raids, he disrobed. And it shocked me. How can a monk with such good meditation disrobe? And we talked with him. We understood why. He said, all those nights we were meditating, I too felt tired. But I controlled myself so much I would not let myself nod. And he said that was so painful. There was so much dukkha that sometimes he would open his eyes and he'd see monks like me, Baba Wangsa, nodding. And he would be jealous of me. He said, I wish I could do that. But he could not. And because of the tension inside of him for 4 years, struggling to control his mind, that was just too much for him to bear, and he had to leave. It is those people who control the mind, who are very restless, they're the ones which I am concerned about. There's an old story I read in a commentary many, many, many years ago. And I can't find it, I'm not quite sure where this is. But it was one of those occasions when the Buddha smiled. Because there's only a few occasions in the canon, or in the commentaries, where the Buddha smiled. And this was one of them. And it fascinated me because it was not what I expected. The story, as I remember it, and I may have lost a few details because it's such a long time ago, was the Buddha was walking in the forest together with his attendant, Ananda. And as he was walking in the forest, he saw a monk meditating with a perfect posture, you know, in full lotus, with his right hand over his left, thumbs touching, back straight, the chin tucked in slightly, the eyes closed and not screwed down tight. The perfect meditation posture, and there he was meditating. And the Buddha turned to his attendant Ananda and said, I'm worried about that monk. And I thought, what are you worried about? He's meditating, he's perfect posture. And about two or three weeks later, that monk disrobed and later got married. The Buddha was right. But later on that morning, he went into the forest, he saw another monk meditating, with a stopping posture and nodding first this way and that way. And the Buddha turned to Ananda and smiled, I'm not worried about that monk. And a few weeks later, that monk was fully enlightened with the psychic powers. You know, just like Mahamoggallana, he has filth and torpor, And soon afterwards he became fully enlightened with all the great psychic powers. This was another monk. And I thought, what's going on? This monk's got froth and torpor. The Buddha should be worried about him. He has a hindrance. This other monk is so straight. And the reason was, and I understand this very well now, that first monk, the one who was so stiff, was what we call, in English, control freak monk. Now you may know control freak monk. You may be one of them. With me, you try to control your mind, you control your body, and you'll know these, recognize these, because they control you as well. They tell you what to do. That's called control freak monk. They're always controlling so hard that yes, their body is very straight, but their mind is never peaceful. They put too much energy into the doing. So much, there's hardly any energy left for the knowing. They can't let go. The second monk, yeah, he could let go. He was nodding. He was not trying to control his body or his mind. He was letting it go according to nature. And the Buddha knew it's only a matter of time before the sloth and torpor vanishes. Because he's not fighting it. He's at peace with it. He's letting it be. It's only a matter of time when that sloth and torpor vanishes. He'll be peaceful. And when he's peaceful, there'll be hardly any restlessness in his mind. And because of that, he will soon get into deep meditation, jhanas, insight, enlightenment, which he did. Which is why when I see dull meditators, I too am not worried about them. At least you can be peaceful. A lot of times, especially when you're meditating in company, the only reason why you're not dull is because of your ego and pride. I can't let other people see me nodding. That is a bigger hindrance than nodding. Give up your pride. This is not about becoming somebody. This is lessening your pride, letting go of your ego, and understanding the nature of the mind. It is wisdom power which takes a person to enlightenment, not willpower. Willpower is just control. It is said last night, it just gives you a bigger ego. It doesn't allow the atta, the illusion of a self, to vanish. So let yourself go. Stop control. And you'll find sloth and torpor vanishes. The same with restlessness. Restlessness, I haven't got my glass of water today. You know the restless mind, all these thoughts which go on in your mind. They're just waves on the surface of a lake. That's all they are. So how can you get that lake to be perfectly still? Imagine someone putting their hands on those waves and patting them down, trying to smooth out the water. You will just make more waves. Which is why when people fight restlessness, they have more restlessness, not less. And sometimes you get so frustrated. How can I stop thinking? How can I stop these fantasies? How can I make my mind peaceful? It's always thinking. On my fifth rank, so I'll tell you a personal story now. It's embarrassing, but it's helpful. My sixth was I spent in the north of Thailand, in a place very similar to this. It was in the middle of a tea plantation. And it was a perfect monastery for me. The weather was good, the food was just enough, and the lay people did not bother me. And I was in this abandoned monastery by myself. The first couple of weeks my meditation was very good. But then it started to fall apart. I started to think too much. And the sort of thoughts which came into my mind, and this is my sixth was, were what I call unmonkish thoughts. I became a monk at 23. I started thinking of my old girlfriends. Wonder where they were, whether they were still interested in me. I started thinking of sex, of romance, all the sorts of things a monk should not think of. And I tried to stop all those thoughts. And what happened? They got worse. And I was so embarrassed, I really struggled to stop those thoughts. Now because I was by myself, I had no one to talk to, that I was getting more and more desperate. My mind was going crazy with all these unmonkish thoughts. As a last resort, I went into the main hall where there was a big Buddha Rupa. And even though my faith was not strong at that time, nevertheless I bowed 3 times and asked for help. And probably it was because I was a Westerner that the thought which came into my mind was to do a deal, make a bargain. And the bargain was this, that I would promise to control my mind for 23 hours of the day. But from 3 p.m. to 4 p.m, I would give my mind freedom to think whatever it wanted. 3 p.m. to 4 p.m, it could think the most unmonkish thoughts. Sex, romance, old girlfriends, whatever you wanted to think, 3 to 4 p.m, anything goes. The rest of the time, you behave. I thought that was a fair bargain. So having made that adhisthana in front of the Buddha, my mind will behave, but from 3 to 4 I'd allow it to do whatever it wanted. I went back to meditation, and still the restlessness was as bad as ever. But when it came to 3 o'clock, you know what it's like when you try and fight the mind, you get so tired. At 3 p.m. I went up to my room, and I leant against the wall because I was exhausted. I put my feet out because my knees were sore. And I said to my mind, whatever you want to think about now, anything goes, you can do whatever you want. And for the next 1 hour, my mind watched every breath without missing one. It was so peaceful. And that's a true story. It shocked me, but it taught me a lot about restlessness and its causes. When I was trying to fight the mind, it would go crazy. When I let the mind be, it was still. Try it. See if it works. When you have to let it go, you have to let it be, totally. And my mind was still, and I realized where restlessness comes from. Restlessness comes because you're fighting, and this is the result of fighting. When you let things be and make peace, you have peace. You make peace with the mind, you make peace with everything. And you have enormous peace, which means no restlessness anymore. Sometimes people are meditating and they say this thought comes in from nowhere. It just comes into their mind. That shows your mindfulness is not strong. The thought never came into your mind. You asked it to come in. You went out searching for something to distract yourself. It means you were bored. In meditation, many of you will get bored until you start getting piti sukha, this beautiful joy in the mind. Because you're sitting there, hour after hour. This is only the first full day. You've got another how many more days of this to endure? If you think like that, you're going to get very bored. This is actually how we deal with boredom as monks. Start thinking of things, planning things. Or as the Buddha said, you know, that this is where the first books came from. Of monks who sitting in a forest got bored. They couldn't meditate, so they started writing books about meditation. That's a Gaudiya Sutta. Digga Nikaya, as you remember that. So look, instead of starting to write books and distract yourself, stay with that boredom for a little while. It's okay to be bored. In fact, if you are bored, do an investigation into boredom. What does boredom feel like? Where does it come from? Is it always the same feeling, second after second, or does boredom change? Sometimes you're intensely bored, sometimes medium bored, sometimes, you know, just light boredom. Really understand. Now, boredom becomes a very interesting subject. And so once you're interested in it, it's not boredom anymore. That's one way to overcome the boredom. Investigate. Don't fight. And of course, the best way of overcoming that boredom is actually to get some more value into peace. Many people in the West think the meditators are crazy. What do you mean spending 8 or 9 days just sitting down with no music, with no TV, with no movies, not even being allowed to speak with each other? You must get bored out of your skull. But people who do this, they go back after meditating so happy that very often their bosses at work, this happened to one girl in a recent retreat. She did 9 days, this was her holiday, the only vacation she had in the year. She spent it in my retreat center learning meditation. When she went back, her boss, who she had to argue with the boss to get 9 days off work, the boss looked at her and said, "What drug have you been taking? Because you've changed, you're so happy." She said, "I haven't been taking any drug. Look, I don't care what it was, can you bring me back some next time?" Because she thought she was actually happy. So it's creating that happiness is an important part of meditation, which overcomes a lot of the dullness and also the restlessness. Why do you move? Because you're not content where you are. If you're really happy where you are, you don't want to go anywhere. Are you happy being here right now? Or would you rather this talk end so you can go somewhere else? How much of your life always going somewhere else because you're not happy where you are? That is called restlessness. But sometimes it's hard being happy where you are. You've got an old body. It's hot, it's sick, it's dull. But you find in life you can be happy anywhere. It's just an attitude change is all you need to be happy where you are. You say, "This is good enough for me." Sitting here, offering your body and mind to the Buddha is your gift of Dharma. That's all you're doing. Whatever you get from this meditation, that's just extra. But I'm giving this 6 or 7 days as my dana to the Buddha Dhamma Sangha. I'm giving, expecting nothing back in return. Just my dana. Whatever happens, I've already made immense merit. Thank you very much, I don't want anything more. That type of good enough stops all of your restlessness. You're not trying to get somewhere, to be someone, or go any other place other than you are. This dullness is good enough for me. I'm meditating, that's good enough, I'm giving this to the Buddha. If I'm dull, fine. If I'm restless, fine. Because you are content where you are, restlessness stops. The only reason why you're restless is because you're not happy where you are. So be happy where you are. You are monks. You are nuns. You're upasakas, upasikas. In a Buddhist country, listening to a Dhamma on this retreat, this is as good as it gets. So, be happy here. And if you're happy wherever you are, all restlessness disappears. The saying in your meditation practice, as I said in the first evening here, we don't meditate trying to attain things. If you want to attain something, you never overcome restlessness. Because where you are is never good enough. There's always another place which is better. That's called restlessness. So we've described many of the stages of meditation. So, you know, you're with your breath. But the breath has got no piti sukha yet. I want piti sukha. That's called restlessness. Instead, you're with the breath, you're watching this breath. This is good enough for me. Thank you, this is enough. Then all restlessness disappears because you're happy where you are. Once you develop happiness wherever you are, this is good enough for me. Just this breath going in and out. I'm content with this. I'm not aspiring to any more deeper stage of meditation. Once you're happy where you are, then the hindrance disappears. And then you can go on to the deeper stages. Wanting to get on to the deeper stages stops them happening. and wanting instead causes the restlessness. So you have to learn in meditation to be content with wherever you are. There's an old saying in English, it's a very powerful saying. Whenever you want something more, you cannot enjoy what you already have. When you want something more, you cannot enjoy what you already have. You're a monk sitting here this evening. Doesn't matter what state of mind you're in. Be grateful for this state of mind. Enjoy the mind you have right now, instead of wanting something more. Otherwise you'll never have any piti sukha. Contentment gives rise to piti sukha. The way I meditate these days, I don't struggle or strive at all. Any blockage which comes in my mind, I think, I'm wanting something. I see what I'm wanting. I say, forget it. And when I don't want anything, I'm content. When I'm content, I'm at peace. When I'm at peace, I get what I wanted in the first place. When I wanted it, it never comes. When I give up, it's there for me. That's the way you meditate. Just like I was going to say this earlier, when I was saying the active mind and the passive mind is what leads to deep meditation. The active mind stops it. You all know the great teaching of Bahia. In the seen, there will be just the seen. In the heard, just the heard. In the sense, just the sense. In the cognized, just the cognized. No reaction. It's just teaching to be totally passive. To Bahia, he became an arahant incredibly quickly. Why? Because he knew just how to let things be. Try that teaching in your meditation. In the seen, in the heard, in the sense, especially in the cognized. Dullness. It's just dullness. Instead of be dullness. Like the Buddha's teaching to Bahia. In restlessness. It's just restlessness. Don't react. Then you find all those defilements. They vanish very quickly. Those are the ways to overcome the hindrances. Give it a try. It's difficult to do. Because it's so hard for us to let go. Whenever there's a sense of self, we want to control. When the sense of self vanishes, who's there to control anyone? You do let go. So as you go deeper on the path, your insight grows more and more. As you become so one, Sakadagamis, it's easy to let go. There's no one in there to do anything anyway. So you just totally let go. And that way the hindrances vanish. So, those are the two hindrances, restlessness and sloth and torpor. Don't fight them. You will never overcome them through you, your will. Disappear. Let them be. Be kind. Be gentle. Be compassionate. Be peaceful. Develop the passive mind, not the active mind. And you'll find those hindrances. They vanish like the mist under the warmth of the morning sun. You can see. No more dullness. Clear, peaceful, bright. And very happy. So those are the talk this evening on the two hindrances. Just two this morning. For this evening either. Sloth and torpor. And restlessness. That's for you. Thank you for listening. Okay, now there will be a translation, as best you can. He's very, very kind, my sacrifice, because he's already understood this, and he's doing this as a service. And so I'll leave you for the translation, and then I'll be back again at, was it, at about 10 past 8 for the Q&A. Thank you.
会にくるの。